Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples. Dress listeners, if you suffer from seasonal allergies like me, Astapro is your new go-to. It has been super helpful to me this spring as it bursts into full bloom.
And that's because Astapro is the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter solution for nasal allergy symptoms. Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes while other allergy sprays take hours.
Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray, and Astapro delivers full prescription strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing. You too can get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief like I have with Astapro. It gets me back in the game, ready to record the show for all of you.
Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can Astapro and go today. That's Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Dressed, the History of Fashion is a production of Dressed Media. With over 8 billion people in the world, we all have one thing in common. Every day, we all get dressed.
Welcome to Dressed, the History of Fashion, a podcast where we explore the who, what, when of why we wear. We are fashion historians and your hosts, April Callahan
and Cassidy Zachary.
Dressed listeners, once again, it's time in oh so many ways to not only smell the flowers, but also to see, touch, and listen to them as well. So Cass, are you ready for a little stroll about the garden and to pick some flowers of time with me?
Always, always, always. And of course, Dress Listeners, April is referring to the theme of this week's 2024 Met Gala, which was the Garden of Time. And while the Met Gala has now become one of fashion's most anticipated and ultra-exclusive red carpet or pink or green carpets in the last decade or so, thanks to Anna Wintour's direction of the event, did you know that the annual fundraiser for the Metropolitan Museum of Art's Costume Institute is actually more than 75 years old?
Yes, this is correct. And I have to wonder, now that it's 75, 76 years old at this point, I wonder if this is why the purported price of this year's ticket to the gala correspondingly cost a whopping $75,000. That's right. Ticket, $75,000. I think last year it was $50,000. And that is, you get the honor of paying the $75,000 if and only if you're invited. So adjusted for inflation, that's more than a 1,000% increase from its ticket price when the benefit was first thrown in 1948 as a midnight supper and dance. And while we're not going to get into the detailed history of the quote-unquote party of the year, as it was called back then, we have already done an episode on this in the past. You can return to that. This event has a long and storied history that is not as exclusionary as it has become in recent years. Formerly, basically, it was just open to the public, anyone who could pay the price of the ticket. So that is in the past. Now, the past is the past and the time is nigh. Cass, how many time puns do you think I can fit in this intro to this episode?
Hey, I'm proud of you. Your puns have progressed exponentially. So those time flowers you referenced, this year's gala theme, The Garden of Time, takes its inspiration from a 1962 short story by J.G. Ballard, which centers upon an aristocratic couple, a count and the countess, who are living an idyllic, secluded life in a beautiful villa which contains a magic garden. And the crystalline flowers that grow in the garden have the power to turn back time, which is very important as there is a chaotic mob in the distance which is threatening to overrun the villa. And so the count harvests these flowers to stem the mob's advancement, pun intended. When the last flower is harvested and its magic is extinguished, an unruly mass of people overrun the villa and destroy it. Meanwhile, the count and countess are turned into statues frozen in time.
And this Garden of Time theme was in dialogue with the Costume Institute's annual spring exhibition, which always coincides with the gala. And this year, the exhibition is entitled Sleeping Beauties, Reawakening Fashion. So the Garden of Time theme for the gala was intended to be a metaphor in concert with the exhibition. And it's a metaphor for fashion cycles of creation, death, and rebirth. And in what may or may not have been an intentional little bit of irony.
I'm gonna guess no.
Yeah, probably not. But the irony that's inherent in this story is that it positions the Count and the Countess's life as this sort of unsustainable life of privilege, right? And that is in juxtaposition with this angry, encroaching mob of the majority outside their villa walls. And Cass, in many ways, this is exactly what played out in real life yesterday at the Met Gala.
Yeah, and this is not exactly something, dress listeners, you were seeing mainstream media outlets covering, but there were actually protests outside the Met yesterday during the gala over the event's conspicuous consumption in light of the current atrocities occurring in Eastern Europe and the Middle East. And in the last couple of days, there has been a backlash directed towards the mainstream news outlets who shifted their extensive coverage of these conflicts and ensuing humanitarian crises to who was wearing what at the Met Gala.
Yeah, and one of the most poignant comparisons that I have seen someone make is this comparison of the Met Gala to the Hunger Games.
Oh, yeah.
Where the fashion-obsessed lifestyles of those who are living in the capital were very, very far removed from the desperate plight of those living in the outer districts. And in the end, those outer districts attacked the capital, which it must be said is not unlike this advancing mob that's threatening the gates of the Count and Countess's villa in the story, The Garden of Time. So that is the very theme of the Met Gala itself this year. So there are some very real ways in which the theme for the evening critiqued the gala itself.
Right. And as you actually mentioned, April, in many ways, this story played out in real time, although we are in no way comparing the protesters to an angry mob. I mean, this is such a complex narrative to unpack in terms of how fashion has functioned as a tool of colonialism and capitalism for centuries, something, you know, dress listeners, we have never shied away from talking about on the show. And we are under no delusion that our show is in any way going to solve any of these current conflicts, except for perhaps to make us all more conscious about how incredibly complex and powerful the relationships between ourselves and our clothes can be. And these critiques of this year's Met Gala ultimately highlight the relationship between fashion and politics and humanity, and they really focus fashion as a lens on systemic inequalities of extreme wealth, privilege, and the abuses of power that often come with it.
Yeah, and we just want to make something very clear here that we are not here to venerate the rich or the capitalist systems that got them to where they are. What we are here to do is to report back to all of you about how fashion has shaped the world in which we all currently live. You know, we highlight the significant people, the places, and the materials that help us understand how we got to our present moment and how we got to our present relationships with the clothing that we all wear today, and also how fashion shapes culture. Without a doubt, in recent years especially, the Met Gala has emerged as a cultural moment. All you have to do is check your Instagram feed to see that. So Cass, we've actually been going back and forth if we should even do this episode this year. But ultimately, we decided that this year actually might just be more important than ever in terms of documenting this particular moment in time. So maybe we can kind of ease our way into talking about the gala, and we can start by talking about the museum exhibition that accompanies the gala each year first.
Yes, and sadly, I was not able to fly in for the exhibition opening, but April, you were there, and you and I have not talked yet about it, so I'm super curious about the show. You've told me a little bit about it so far, but we really wanted to save this conversation for this episode and for you dress listeners. And of course, we're going to put a few images up in our Instagram reels. You probably already saw that April put them up in our stories yesterday, but I'm dying to know, how was it, and what can our listeners expect if they come see the show, which is actually up at the Met until September 2nd of 2024?
Yes. Well, the show is big, and it's very good. It can It consists of about 220 garments, which is a massive fashion exhibition. And one of the things that I was like walking around the show, I kept thinking, I was like, oh my gosh, the entire conservation team that had to like deal with all of these things, and every little thing, object, and every little garment has its own special needs in terms of being on display. And putting these things on display is really at the core of the exhibition's thesis or its premise. And so it's called Sleeping Beauties because one of the ideas of the show is to put on display a selection of garments that are in the Costume Institute's permanent collection that are actually too fragile to dress on mannequins. So we have a whole selection of those Sleeping Beauties that are scattered throughout the exhibition, which is organized thematically through this garden theme. Like there's a rose room. There's a whole room that's yellow. It's very garden-centric. So these little Sleeping Beauties are organized according to those themes, and they're flat in kind of vitrine cases. So we see some things that could not be mounted on mannequins, including a really beautiful House of Worth dress. There's a Poiret. There's a Fortuny. There's one of Norman Norell's very famous sailor dresses as well. And they talk about the conservation concerns that prevent those pieces from being mounted as they are typically. And they bring them to life as much as possible in terms of creating these immersive environments around them. So there's scent that's included in the exhibition. There's sound that's included in the exhibition. You are allowed to touch certain things in the exhibition. And this is, it's really, really cool. There's also some holograms that bring some of these garments to life. And some of the holograms have AI interactivity incorporated into them. So you can ask the holograms questions and they will answer you back. Oh, it's cool. A fascinating exhibition. a lot of the scent that's included is not necessarily just perfuming a space, but they have worked with the scent artist Cecil Talas. And she has this technology where she's able to capture the scent of an object and then recreate it synthetically in the lab. And then those scents are next to the objects by way of like little tubing and pipes and stuff. And you can smell like what a Poiret garment smells like.
That's amazing. I was reading about how there's a Millicent Rogers gallery, which she was a huge collector and huge fashion icon, obviously, in her day and today. But I was reading about it. It says it focuses on her scent. So Millicent Rogers' scent through analyzing molecules from her garments, like a 1938 Schiaparelli evening dress and blue silk crepe, to discover her fragrances, but also habits mm-hmm. and lifestyle, including what she ate, drank, and smoked, which is just so fascinating to me. And I think I read it was on Vogue's Instagram page, but they said, how can we understand the sensory experience of wearing a garment after it enters the museum collection and is no longer worn on the body or too fragile to even be displayed? So
oh, yes.
This exhibition really has Andrew Bolton written all over it. And it's also very much for fashion history and fashion like conservation and curator nerd or anyone who just loves the behind the scenes mm-hmm. element of preserving garments.
And also so many of those pieces are things that we all as fashion historians, professional fashion historians, pieces that we know about, but you've never necessarily seen them in person. And there's almost 250 pieces.
I also read somewhere that they captured sounds of fabric in an echo-free chamber, which I thought was cool. And then this is a word I think you've actually mentioned on the show, but scrooping.
I know exactly what you're going to say. It's the sound that 18th century silk makes when it rustles.
Yes, a combination of the words scrape and whoop. And the sound was captured in an echo-free chamber at Binghamton University's. It described as a multi-sensory experience, right? So where normally you would just go and observe garments, they really want you to go and imagine and be transported in a way, right? Into what it would have been mm-hmm. like to wear them.
There's a lot of video incorporated into the little thematic rooms. There's an entire room devoted to birds in fashion, and there's videos on the ceiling. Yeah, it's very interesting. And then there's, in certain rooms, there's also poetry that's incorporated as sound that's like speaking to the theme as well.
Yeah, on the Met's website, yeah. I was reading, there's, you know, you have the website page for the exhibition, and there's a section called The Nightingale, which I thought was fascinating. So I clicked on it, and it's a poem about a nightingale. That's a metaphor for, quote, the fragility and ephemerality of fashion and a vehicle to examine the cyclical themes of rebirth and renewal. And it's basically about this thorn that's getting closer and closer to this nightingale's heart. It's incredibly beautiful and heartbreaking at the same time. which Andrew Bolton, his like inspiration is very leveled and layered, right? It's very inspired and very moving and meaningful and deep. Can you tell me about some of your favorite pieces? I know I have a few that I've just read about or seen photos of that I am so excited to actually see in person once I make it out there.
Oh my goodness gracious. where to even begin? So the exhibition starts off with a very famous Worth dress. It's that one that's the silk satin that belonged to Carrie Astor, and it has like the kind of beading and cloud.
Oh, right, and the sunburst.
On it. Yeah, and that's one of the ones that they actually turned into the hologram. So you can see her dancing in it in the hologram, which is very, very cool. There's some really beautiful Paul Paré pieces in there using Paul Uribe textiles. There's Schiaparelli, of course. And if any of you listening were in my recent designer class, there's so much work by the designers that we featured in this last session of classes that's in the exhibition. It was really cool to have spoken to you all about some of these pieces and then see them in person just a couple days later. I think one of my favorite pieces, there's a very rare Jeanne Hallé hobble skirt in the exhibition. And they also turned that one into a hologram so you could see the gait of a woman when she walks wearing the hobble skirt. But then there were also some pieces in there that I was, by designers, I was not familiar with. There was one piece by B.S. Siesenfeld, who works in paper. She's an artist, fashion designer, a sculptor, and it was called Ammonite. And it looks like these weird little sea creatures, and you can't tell that it's paper. It almost looks like it's like a really soft white textile, but it's actually paper. And apparently her work has been worn by Bjork and Lady Gaga. That one was really avant-garde. So you're having these historic fashions right next to these pieces that are like super, super avant-garde. That one was cool.
Well, and speaking about the life and death cycle of garments, right? Isn't there a garment that's actually growing in there?
Yes,
as well?
There is a jacket. I think it's a jacket, like a men's like a blazer that's growing grass. It's been seeded with grass. That's not anything all that unusual, though. Some of those paper dresses of the 1960s were seeded with seeds as well, and they would grow after the owner decided to wear it.
Interesting. I've never heard of that.
Where to begin? There's a really unusual Margiela dress that's an interpretation of Van Gogh's work. And it's all beaded and sequined, which is not necessarily what you expect from Margiela.
And then there's that Yves Saint Laurent jacket from 1988, which is just like insanely beaded. Mm-hmm. And it's, of course, Van Gogh's famous depiction of the irises. Something like 600 hours of work using 250 meters of ribbon, 200,000 beads, and 250,000 spangles in 22 colors.
Yeah. And it's flat. It has to be so heavy.
So heavy.
I mean, looking at it in the case, it was probably like a good 4 or 5 inches thick. The thing is we were there for this preview, so there were other people there. I need to go back and look at everything again. It was overwhelming.
Well, you will be there every Friday this summer, and our listeners can join you for your Fashion Friday nights at the Met.
That is true. Dress listeners, did you know that you can save on everything from fashion to beauty, home decor to groceries, even kids' school supplies with Rakuten?
Rakuten is a shopping platform that partners with over 3,500 stores across every category. Beauty, clothing, electronics, home, department stores, pets, you name it. You're already shopping at your favorite stores, so why not be saving while doing it? It really is a no-brainer.
How does it work, you ask? Well, stores pay Rakuten a commission for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the commission with its members. You get paid via a check or PayPal quarterly.
Membership is free, and it's easy to sign up. So join the 17 million members who have already saved at their favorite brands. Start all your shopping at Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app to start saving today. Your cash back really adds up. That's Rakuten.com.
Dress listeners, whatever your reason for wanting to learn a new language, whether it's an upcoming international adventure, communicating with your friends and family abroad, or even professional purposes, Rosetta Stone has got you covered.
As the trusted expert in language learning for 30 years now, you can join millions of Rosetta Stone users to learn any of the 25 languages offered. That includes Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, Arabic, and so many more.
And this is fast language acquisition, friends. There are no English translations, so you learn to speak, listen, and think in your new language. And right now, you can get lifetime access to all 25 of Rosetta Stone's language courses for 50% off. That's language learning for 25 languages for the rest of your life, which, Cass, is frankly amazing.
It is. And what are you waiting for, Dress listeners? Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Dress listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Menopause, perimenopause. These can be some of the most uncomfortable phases of a woman's life. If you find yourself in either of these, well, Hormone Harmony is here for you. Hormone Harmony capsules contain science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now, here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life.
Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it really shows.
And get this, Hormone Harmony isn't just for menopause. Any woman with symptoms of hormonal imbalances can take it. But it is perfect for those horrible menopause symptoms that put a woman's life on hold.
And for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code DRESSED at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code DRESSED for 15% off today. Sarah Scaturo, of course, past Dress guest, fashionist conservator extraordinaire, was writing about one of the dresses on View, which is the Kayo Sur Mermaid Bride Dress. It's from 1930. It has something like a 30-foot train, and it's cascading down the stairwell. And she writes, "My heart goes out to the conservators who need to keep this dust-free for the run of the exhibition."
Yeah. It's the very last piece in the exhibition, of course, because the bridal look traditionally is what closes a couture show.
And I actually thought this was a perfect way to segue into talking about the Met Gala, because actress Isabel Huppert wore a Balenciaga recreation, so Demna for Balenciaga recreation of this gown on the red carpet last night. Did you know, April, that Isabel is actually the great-great-granddaughter of Marthe Bertrand, one of the founders of Kayo Sur?
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah. Thank you to Edward and Defunct Fashion for that little fact. But there are actually so many fashion history moments on the red carpet last night.
Ton of them.
Where do we even begin? Maybe with just our initial thoughts.
Okay. Big picture-wise, I thought it was lovely, the red carpet, but I think it was maybe a little boring. We didn't have any of those moments where somebody just like, my jaw never dropped, right? I never gasped like you do sometimes when you get those red carpet looks.
And it was a very easy theme, right? And to the credit of that, people were very spot on with the theme. So, you know, it's like a garden in time, right? And Jordan Roth, for instance, was wearing Valentino couture, of course, custom. And it was the life cycle of a flower. So he had the buds at the top and then they bloomed all the way down. And at the bottom, they died and decayed and went back into the earth. I think it was easier than normal versus, say, the camp theme for people to get it right. And people did look amazing. And there was also, as I mentioned, just so many fashion history recreations and references. So that was what I was most excited about. And I'm just going to go through a couple of those here before we kind of get on to our favorite pieces. But Demna for Balenciaga, for all of the things that we've, you know, don't appreciate about his work, I thought he actually did an incredible job paying proper homage to fashion history last night. So that Kayo Sur reference I just mentioned on Isabel, but also Nicole Kidman came in a Cristobal Balenciaga recreation from 1951, famously actually photographed by Richard Avedon for Harper's Bazaar. 800 hours of hand embroidery, April, 3,000 feathers using 150 meters of silk organza.
Yeah.
So thank you, Demna, for reminding us about the art of the founder of the house.
And the thing is that they have been doing this recently in the past few years, right? Doing some of these creations of the classic Balenciaga looks. Mm-hmm. So, I think he got a lot of criticism, and they're trying to balance things out a little bit. So yeah. That's good. I appreciated it as well.
And there was also, of course, lots of John Galliano for Margiela on the red carpet, or as I said, green and cream lemon carpet last night. Gwendolyn Christie wore custom Margiela haute couture, which referenced Vionnet, as his collection did recently. Kim Kardashian was wearing custom Margiela. And then Zendaya came in a John Galliano, does John Galliano. He paid homage to a 1999 recreation he did for Dior. And then she came back again to close out the carpet in a 1996 vintage Galliano for Givenchy, wearing Philip Tracy for Alexander McQueen headdress. So that was a showstopper. And then Amanda Siegfried was wearing like a Prada robe de steel. Anna Wintour was in a Loewe coat that was referencing that 1889 Worth cloak on exhibition, actually in the Met. So I was really impressed with that.
I want to say something about this because I actually have been working on the House of Worth a little bit. This is a really interesting cape that's in the exhibition. It's a tulip hollandaise. That's the name of the cape. It's a black cape. It's from 1889. And the fabric is this incredibly beautifully woven tulip motif on a black ground. So the flowers pop. They're very, very bright. So I think that this is the year that Charles Frederick Worth stopped coming into the couture house. Mm-hmm. I think this is probably by Jean-Philippe, his son.
Oh, interesting.
But even more interesting, that piece that's in the exhibition, it was a ready-to-wear piece that was retailed at a boutique that was called Moret, Pochets, and Bolin or something like that. And yeah, I just thought that that was a really interesting example of this intersection of the haute couture houses still retailing to like these high-end luxury boutiques. But that's what that cape is that Jonathan was referencing for Anna.
Such a smart reference. And Anna Wintour is not really one to look back or to do fashion history references. She usually comes dressed in Prada
or Chanel.
And so I was actually very impressed and very excited when I saw that, because she was, I believe, the first person to walk the carpet. And you recognize that cloak. So it really was a perfect way to start the gala carpet, which is about paying homage to Sleeping Exhibition. Yes. So,
yes. And so that is one thing that we have to say. The theme of the gala was the Garden of Time.
Right.
But the name of the exhibition is Sleeping Beauty's Reawakening Fashion. So they're kind of like tagging on to each other conceptually. They're not the exact same thing.
I was disappointed there was no Sleeping Beauty cosplay. I thought for sure at least one person would have done Sleeping Beauty cosplay, but there was none, alas.
Anna probably nixed it.
Yes, that is true. What were some of your favorite designs, or what was one of your favorite dresses of the night?
Okay, I have to say, I think the person that really, 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 truly got this theme was Elle Fanning. And she hasn't been one of those people that's like front and foremost in a lot of this press coverage. You might have to look up a picture of her. But she's wearing Balmain, which is, of course, by Olivier Rousteing. And what's so special about this dress is the textile, because it's made from this textile that's kind of sheer, but it looks like ice. It looks like her entire body is encased in ice. And then she has these resin birds on her shoulders. And in the Garden of Time story, those time flowers are made of crystal. So I thought that this was a very, very cool reference back to the story itself. And then the overall silhouette of the dress is very much giving me this one particular dress that Cecil Beaton designed for Gigi. And it's when they go to Maxime's and she's wearing like this white satin dress that has these two birds on the shoulders. So I'm wondering if that Cecil Beaton dress wasn't a little bit of an inspiration.
Oh, very good reference. I did not catch that.
But that was probably my number one pick, because I feel like she not only nailed the theme with a smart reference, but the dress is spectacularly beautiful as well.
Yeah, it's actually hard for me to pick a favorite, so I'm going to work up to it. But while we're on the topic of Balmain and Olivier, I thought really knocked it out of the park on multiple fronts for this year's Met Gala, especially with what Tyla wore. She is wearing a reference to not the Garden of Time, but the Sands of Time, right? These are the days of our lives, like sand through the hourglass. And she's actually holding, for those of you who didn't get the immediate reference, she's holding an hourglass with sand in it as a purse, I believe. But her dress is basically, it looks like it's sculpted out of sand to her body. She's got kind of sand dusting on her shoulder. And Olivier actually told Vogue about this dress. He said the inspiration behind this creation stemmed from a desire to redefine boundaries and transform a transient material into an everlasting masterpiece. The idea of sculpting a garment from something as ephemeral as sand ignited my imagination, and I could not be happier with the end result. And for his part, he actually was wearing a black suit, but then he had a sculpted bodice made out of sand that I believe is his face.
Olivier posted once they were actually in the gala and like in the space. So the party's held in the room in the Met. That's the Temple of Dendera room. There's a video of them in the corner, and he's down on his knees with a pair of scissors, and he's cutting Tyla's dress into a mini skirt.
Oh, awesome.
So then she could actually walk around the party. But he's just down there doing the work. I mean, that's something to say. These fashion designers are there too, and they're working, right? So I talked to Stephen Jones, past dress guest, and he was like, I haven't been to bed yet. I was up all night doing fittings. And then I talked to my other friend, Irene, who's Jonathan Anderson's assistant at Loewe. She's like, we have an entire atelier here. We're dressing 14 people. We have fittings. It's like completely insane. So the designers Amazing. Are there to go to the party sometimes, but also they're working their butts off in those, you know, hours and days leading up to it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So who else did you like?
Okay. I am so excited to tell you about this person who basically has gotten not a lot of really big coverage. Did you see Mona Patel's look by Iris van Herpen?
I did.
Vogue India. But she is an Indian businesswoman and philanthropist. And one of her main things that she does is she has this not-for-profit called Couture for Cause. And she auctions off one-of-a-kind couture and that then goes out for philanthropy. She's been named in Forbes as like one of the next 1,000 up-and-coming people in the world, changing the world. But she was styled by La Roche, and she wears this incredible Iris van Herpen dress that I want to say is kind of like this, it's like chimeric creation kind of. It evokes fairies, but it also evokes sea creatures at the same time. And it's strapless. And then it has this crazy undulating back. And because she is Indian, it was really important for her to obviously work with Iris's team, but she also wanted Indian embroiderers to execute the embroidery. So she worked with this really high-end Indian embroidery house called Marseille to do all of the embroidery on the dress. And then she also worked with an artist friend. She has these, they're not sleeves because the dress itself is strapless, but they're almost like a system of bracelets that go up and down her arms that are kinetic. And so they look like butterflies. They kind of look like flowers, but they can move as she walks, which is, I mean, it's really, really beautiful. We will post images, obviously, and a link to the Vogue India article.
Yeah, and I'm actually glad you mentioned the magical elements of her dress, because there were a couple different dresses, such as Gabrielle Union, who was in this like mermaid number, and then Carol G was basically a crystal fairy. She even came with little elf ears or fairy ears. She was wearing Marc Jacobs. And fairies are in gardens, right? Maybe mermaids aren't, but fairies are. And so I really appreciated those magical moments on the red carpet and those more whimsical moments as well. But that actually is a nice transition in terms of speaking about Indian craftsmanship and Indian heritage. So one of my hands down favorite garments of the night was the sari that Ali Bhatt wore. She is a British actress of Indian heritage. She wore this mint green sari by the Indian couturier Sabayashi. He's an Indian fashion designer, and she showed up in a 23-foot long train that was this incredibly beautiful, like drop-dead gorgeous, hand-embroidered. And it's embroidered with silk floss, glass beading, and semi-precious gemstones. And it's paying tribute not only to J.G. Ballard's The Garden of Time, but also the incredible tradition of embroidery and textile craftsmanship in India. 163 people, including craftsmen, dyers, and embroiderers, worked on this dress that took 1,965 hours to create. So
yes,
it is so incredibly stunning. Again, we will post pictures, but that was hands down one of my favorites of the evening.
Yeah. And India really is at this point. I mean, it has always been a capital of handcraft and embroidery. But India right now is considered the pinnacle of the art form in a lot of different ways. Even some of our friends who are couture embroiderers in Paris have spoken to us directly about like how Indian craftsmanship is really revered in that realm right now in contemporary fashion.
Yeah. And Dries Van Noten for many, many years, obviously he no longer helms his brand, which makes me so sad, but worked directly with Indian embroiderers on his garments.
Well, my next fave is actually a duo. Did you see Eddie Redmayne and his wife, Hannah Bagshaw's matching ensembles?
I did. And I'm so glad that you're going to tell me all about them because I was kind of like, what is going on? This is interesting, but I did not look it up and find out. So please tell me.
Yes. Okay. So they're by kind of a younger designer. His name is Steve O. Smith. And so they're not exactly matching. They're coordinating ensembles. What's so fascinating about them is the textiles. So Steve O. Smith, what he does is he does these line drawings, and then he takes some of those motifs and he turns them into his textiles. And for this specific one, it's like this biomorphic black blob pattern that's juxtaposed on top of sheer organza. So the organza is white. It's completely see-through. But the black sections might be crepe. They might actually be applique because he does a lot of applique on his garments. And Hannah is in a dress. Eddie, the top of his ensemble is like a suit jacket, but then it becomes sheer in certain points. And then also, I'm pretty sure like he's wearing a skirt.
Yes.
It's hard to tell. It's kind of tunicky. There's a layer of tulle underneath. But I was very impressed. I was like, oh, those are some really cool textiles. And they looked amazing together. Right.
Yeah.
Coordinate.
Yeah. It's so graphically stunning and beautiful. Mm-hmm. And again, not a literal interpretation of the theme. So getting really inventive with it and doing something that you don't necessarily expect, which is really cool.
I guess the patterning feels very like I said, biomorphic.
Yes.
It feels like it's living.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Organic.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you?
So one of my other hand down favorites of the evening was Lily Gladstone, who has been taking the world by storm this award season. Obviously, the star of Martin Scorsese's Killers of the Flower Moon, first Native American actress to win a Golden Globe, to be nominated for an Oscar in the Best Actress category. And she has just been killing it on the red carpet this season and really bringing a lot of Indigenous fashion to the red carpet as well. And the Met Gala was no exception. So she actually wore a look created by Gabriella Hearst and the Kiowa jeweler, Carrie Atombi, who I am a huge fan of. I actually just met her at this past fall's Indian market. I sheepishly introduced myself to her. I'm a huge fan of her work. She handcrafted 500 silver stars, hand-embroidered with antique glass beads arranged into 9 different constellations on her dress. So it's a black, maybe chiffon, and it's really a canvas for these constellations. And Carrie told Christian Allaire at Vogue, "I love the combination of the sleeping, beauty, and garden of time themes articulating itself through a blanket of stars. Since time immemorial, Kiowa, Blackfeet, and other Plains people have always said we come from the stars, and it is where we return to join our ancestors. It's a tapestry of time under the veil of night." Isn't that beautiful?
It is. I love it.
Yeah.
And you know what? There was another noted Native American jewelry designer, Heather Dixon, which was worn by Quanah Chasing Horse. And all of her jewelry and even her hair accessories were done in feathers, quills, and fur with the forget-me-not flowers motif, which
beautiful.
Has special meaning to her peoples in Alaska.
Oh, lovely. That's beautiful. I actually did not see Quanah. I'm going to have to look her up because she's a Met Gala staple at this point as well. So I'm always interested to see what she's wearing.
Well, she's wearing H&M, so that's why I bring up her jewelry and not necessarily her garment.
H&M.
I mean, it is pretty. Yeah. It's pretty, but it is H&M. So
I guess that segues into our fails section for the evening.
Yes. Let's see. Okay. Hands down, my fail has to be Doja. I love Doja, and I love how wacky and wild she can be. She's wearing vêtements. She went through a couple different outfit changes. When she showed up, originally, she was wearing this tiny little mini dress that basically looked like she had a towel wrapped around her, like she just got out of a shower and she had her hair up in a towel turban. And then later on the stairs going up on the quote unquote green carpet, she was wearing a basically like a floor length t-shirt and she'd been doused in water. I don't know. Come on. It's just Demna doing his shtick again. And I'm still over it.
Yeah, no, I didn't get it at all. I did not get it, nor did
it. It wasn't on theme either.
I know. And nor did I get the Chloe crew that all came together in
boho.
1970s boho chic. That was so, I mean, it's beautiful chiffon earth tones, but it's not Met Gala. It's so boring. It is so, oh God. Yeah, that, and they all came together too. So it was just like a glom of boring boho chic. Although there was, obviously, fashion history reference, that fabulous Chloe belt, metal belt, is a historical recreation. But otherwise, that was...
It's like when you have the opportunity to do ultimate glam because it's the Met Gala,
right?
Why would you not take it, I guess, is my question.
Right.
Okay. Somebody who did do glam, but I also have to say I was not necessarily a fan of, and this breaks my heart to say... Sarah Jessica Parker.
Oh, I liked she was, it. I mean, it wasn't she was exceptional, but...
Richard Quinn. It was a little too uptight. A friend of mine remarked that the Central Park Conservatory luncheon was last week, which is this big event in New York where all these society women get all dressed up and they wear the British-style hats. It's this whole event. But it's that very uptight Upper East Side society lady fashion, and that's the vibes that... SJP was giving off.
Yeah, she usually knocks it out of the park. And I agree. I was not head over heels for that look. She always brings sculptural fashion check. She brought the fabulous headwear check. But yeah, it wasn't anything unique, I guess, enough for her.
No, it didn't make me feel anything.
Yeah. Although I will say it was, again, kind of in that robe de steel silhouette, which has really made a comeback the last few years everywhere. People are wearing those artificial padded hips, which I do love to see.
What about you? Do you have some misses?
There is a lot of mixed opinions on this. I've seen people praising this look and people who share my opinion, which is the Sean McGuire for Alexander McQueen homage to McQueen worn by Lana Del Rey. I did not like it.
I have it written down with a meh.
So Sean's intending to pay homage, or he is paying homage, to McQueen's famous antler headpiece that is worn for McQueen's Widows of Culloden collection, autumn-winter 2006-2007, which is one of the most unforgettable looks from McQueen's oeuvre, and it's instantly recognizable. The model's wearing these antlers that are draped in this cream lace that is wound around the antlers and the model's head and face, and the dark beauty of this look is that they had to poke the antlers through this $2,000 piece of lace. And as McQueen said in his own words, it worked because it looks like she's rammed the piece of lace with her antlers. There's always spontaneity. You got to allow for that in my shows. So McQueen's work is always underwritten with this rawness and darkness and poetry, and it's just not present in this Sean McGuire homage, which to me looks like a costume. I'm just going to leave that there.
Some people loved it. I was just like, I don't care. It wasn't awful. Yeah. I didn't hate it.
It didn't do it for me. And then also Lizzo, I don't know. I love her too. I love her so much. I just didn't get it.
I actually went down the rabbit hole a little bit trying to figure out what I was missing.
Uh-huh.
Like, what is this supposed to be? The design was by Victor Vine Santo. My notes that I wrote down, I'm still confused what is happening here. So she has on this headpiece that's encasing her head that's kind of like in a triangle shape.
Like a vase shape.
Flowers. Yeah, embedded in it. And then that continues down on her dress. And then when her dress hits the ground, it turns back up. It's almost like water splashing, but it's not formed like water. I don't think it's supposed to be water. The whole thing just... I mean, it looks like it's meticulously made. I'm just confused about what's happening.
Yeah, and there is
the silhouette.
Flowers in there. There's flowers encased in the mesh. It's her head piece is corseted. Now I'm on her Instagram. seeing if I can find more information.
I read an entire article about it, and the article seemed like they were confused.
I will say, looking at these close-up studio portraits, it's insanely beautiful with the crushed flowers, real flowers encased. It's really pretty up close. But yeah, the silhouette, I did not understand it. But hey,
sometimes you have to dress to be photographed, you know?
But at least she did something interesting. I feel like most people didn't even do that. But
another fail for me actually was Dua Lipa.
Yeah, what was going on there?
Marc Jacobs, because it was very not on theme at all. It was kind of goth lace. Mm-hmm. And while the lace was really beautiful, she also had on a very kind of, I don't know, matronly looking white canvas corset under it that seems like a medical device. I didn't understand that one either. And I love Marc Jacobs. He usually does, you know, really great things for the...
Yeah. And I do, I will say, I wish people just had done more vintage. Like, I thought the recreations, especially in theme, in line with the Sleeping Beauty theme, to wear vintage, or I guess maybe Kim Kardashian wearing Marilyn Monroe's dress scared people away from vintage. But I would have liked to see more vintage or more homages, I think, to famous pieces. Like, just, recreate them or put your own spin on it. But, you know. That is also the theme of the Met Gala, which is brand
sponsorship
and brand display.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't realize that these tickets are $75,000, right? So even some of these celebrities aren't necessarily paying $75,000 to go. They're getting invited by the fashion brands who are, one, dressing them, and two, they're sitting at those fashion brands who have bought an entire table. So... yeah, even some of the celebrities aren't forking over $75,000.
Yeah.
So, do you have any last thoughts?
I don't. I mean, there was a couple honorable mentions. There actually were a lot of really good, you know, plus size fashion moments. A lot of different shapes celebrated on the red carpet, as it should be. When Sam Smith was interviewed by, I believe, Ashley Graham, and asked what they hope to see for the future of fashion, Sam said, "I want to be able to buy clothes my size in the store." Divine Joy Randolph, who of course just won Best Supporting Actress Oscar this last award season, she was wearing custom Zac Posen. Zac Posen is now the head of Gap. And Zac Posen is a maestro of fabric. And he created this exceptionally beautiful denim gown with like all this princess seaming. It's like pieced denim that fit her.
It's very sculptural.
Yes. And fit her to a T. So those are my honorable mentions. I think that does it for us, unless you have anyone else you want to mention.
I guess maybe my one honorable mention might be Nicki Minaj. I thought her dress was really interesting. It's Marnie by Francesco Riso. And I saw him speaking about the dress, and it was, the base of it was satin that was hand-painted in 10 different layers. So the paint is building up on the bodice of the dress. And then she has all these like metal sculptural flowers like poking off in these weird and whimsical ways. It's very, very sculptural and very, very fun. It's bright.
And that was really fun. And I really liked that. And I think people are going to be like, why didn't you mention Cardi B? So we probably should mention Cardi B, because
Cardi B
was supposed to be the showstopper that was ending the red carpet. My guess is that she was late, because I actually think Zendaya was supposed to close out the red carpet, because all of the images of Zendaya in her second look came after the red carpet had been shut down. But Cardi B was the showstopper. I mean, in this massive, massive black dress that was a mermaid hem, so it was spread out around her in maybe a 10-foot diameter. But I didn't get it.
No. And also not on theme. It was black. Lots of ruffles. It was very flouncy. Not a fan.
Yeah. It actually reminded me of Ursula.
She did not steal the show. And I think that was what she was trying to do.
No.
It didn't
work. But I do love her, because she always is so experimental. She wore those iconic Thierry Mugler archive pieces. Like, she is not afraid to experiment with fashion and go all out. So more power to her. I also really loved her 3-foot-high Ganza beehive hair style turban thing. But yeah, it didn't quite make the mark. But I always appreciate a good effort.
Yes. Well, listeners, I think that does it for our 2024 Met Gala coverage. If you would like to see the exhibition Sleeping Beauty: Reawakening Fashion at the Met, That is on view through September 2nd, 2024. So you have plenty of time. But until then, maybe you consider what fantasy Met Gala creation you would wear next time you get dressed.
And of course, check out our Instagram at dressed_podcast for reels and photographs to accompany this episode. You can check out the hashtag dressed, FHN61. And also DM us if you want, or write to us at hello@dressedhistory.com. And dress listeners, we also forgot to mention that we have two spots left on our Paris Fashion History tour in September of this year. So in just a couple months, it'll be here before you know it. We have two spots left, and we will start a wait list once that fills up, because we might add a second week if there's enough interest. So head on over to dressedhistory.com/tours to register now.
Thank you, as always. We appreciate you. More dress coming your way on Friday. Dress, the History of Fashion, is a production of Dressed Media.